good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Monday, March the 14th, 2016. 12:13 coming up on 12:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Scott Spears along with you here on the Now program. And during the first hour today, we are going to remember a Marion resident, born in Marion, graduate of Pleasant High School, who sadly passed away this past Saturday at the age of 67. Gone too soon. Wrestling legend, really. NWA territories, was in WWE during the big boom in the early 1980s. Charlie Fulton, who unfortunately left us at the age of 67, as I say. During the next hour, we are going to pay tribute to Charlie. We've got some clips of interviews we've done with Charlie, one we did back in 2012. So we're going to play those. We're going to be joined later on in this hour by Mr. USA Tony Atlas and a legendary wrestling referee Tommy Young, who was really close with Charlie, and we'll learn about their close relationship and how it maintained even up through last year. We did get word from J.J. Dillon, who's sorry he couldn't be on the program with us today, but he wanted to send this along, legendary manager of the Four Horsemen. Charlie and I were neighbors in the same apartment complex in Charlotte when I started in 1971. He was a great guy and a credit to our business. I saw him at one of the fan fest within the last couple of years. It was good to see him again after all those years had passed, and we got to talk old times together. That's J.J. Dillon on Charlie Fulton. And first up here on the program today, another great wrestling legend, Robert Welch. Robert, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. How are you doing today?
Doing very well. Probably better known as Robert Fuller in the wrestling business. What were your memories of Charlie Fulton?
Well, you know, my brother and I operated a wrestling company out of Florida, Northwest Florida, and the state of Alabama for about 15 years, and Charlie worked for us, and he was one of our top stars, and he did a great job for us, and he was one heck of a guy, and you know, a good, honest, hard-working boy, and we thought a lot of him.
What were his skills like in the ring?
Well, he was very good. He was very good. As you know, it wasn't just that he worked for us. The many guys that worked for us wound up working later on for Vince, and at that time WWF, and of course at the time that Charlie was working for us, World Wrestling out of Atlanta, and Turner Broadcasting was very big. And Charlie had, you know, he did the rounds. He left us and went on to work for Turner Broadcasting, and then to work for Vince and WWF, and made quite a name for himself. And he's certainly a guy that deserved it. He was really a wonderful guy.
When he was not in the ring, when you would talk with him or see him outside of the ring, what kind of personality was he?
You know what, we had a lot of fun. Because we lived in Pensacola, and when you worked our territory, you worked as far as Tallahassee, over in Panhandle of Florida, and all the way up to Birmingham and Florence, Alabama. And so we lived in Pensacola. We spent a lot of time out on the beach, and so we had a lot of time to have fun together and drink a few beers and get a suntan, and whitest beach in the dadgum world, and it was just really wonderful being in that area, and Charlie seemed to really enjoy himself and have a good time, and we had a good time many times together, not only having fun, like I said, out on the beach, but traveling on the highway, and he was just one of those guys. It was a pleasure to be around. I know the wrestling profession is really going to miss him, and I know Charlie, the type of guy that he was, has just hundreds of friends, and you know, I'm sure, you know, at his funeral there, that you'd look out to have several of those folks show up.
When you look back at those days and you look back at his career, how will you remember him?
Just a real decent, good guy. You know, I've in doing promotion in wrestling, you meet all kinds of people, and you know, some of them aren't so pleasant, and some of them are difficult to work with. You know, they're always worried about how much money they're making and whether they're being treated right and whether they're the star or not, and all of these things. That Charlie was one of these guys. He's just a good, decent guy that said, you know, I'm going to leave all that up to the promotion and to the bookers and the owners of the place that I work, and take what comes to me, and be easy to get along with and a pleasant person. And you don't find a lot of guys around like that. And Charlie was one of those guys. That's the thing I remember about him the most, that he was always a real pleasure to work with. You put him on your cards, you had no problems. He went out there and he busted his hind end, and he'd give you the best match he could possibly give you. And just a real super guy. No matter, you know, whether you're riding in the car or hanging out on the beach or at the show ready to go in the ring, that he was just a guy you could count on. And he was a hard worker, and one of the better guys in the ring in wrestling at his time.
You know, it's great to hear that. We thank you so much, Robert Fuller, for calling in to remember Charlie Fulton, who sadly passed away on Saturday at the age of 67. Thank you so much, Robert.
You know, my pleasure, Scott.
Bye-bye. And we're going to continue on here. We're going to take, actually, in his own words, Charlie Fulton talking on this program back in 2012 about breaking into the wrestling business, and hopefully come back on the other side of that with Tony Atlas. So here is Charlie Fulton.
Then. But a lot of people couldn't break in because of the physicality. They just couldn't pick up the idea of what was being done.
Right.
How were you able to learn the moves, learn how to become a performer?
I'll tell you, a lot of that was like OJT, on-the-job training. Mm. You know, I learned so much in the gym, once you get out in the ring and you get in front of people, that's nowhere near, you know, it's not like the gym. And some people, they'll help you along, and you know, you learn by your mistakes, and people sometimes will... It gets kind of serious. One of my trades say sometime, you know, you learn it the hard way. Mm-hmm. You know, you get slapped around, knocked around a little bit, and it used to happen more back in those days, and even before me. You know, it was, some guys were pretty dangerous, and either you learn it or they're going to make you wish you never showed up.
So it did become more real at times than others.
Oh, yeah, it was, you know, it's always been sports entertainment, but yeah, there's... No matter what you think, there's a lot of tough guys out there.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of guys that can, you know, pop your leg or your elbow, your arm, and before you know what happened, you know. And everybody, you don't do that, because if everybody did that, you know, you got to have a job, you got to pay your bills. But back, well, it probably still is now, but back then there were a lot of tough guys.
Is there anybody in particular who sticks out in your mind who was...
Really tough?
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard of Lou Thesz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was like... I wrestled him. He was old when I wrestled him in, like, I think it was Huntsville, Alabama, about 1973. And I had him in a headlock, and he took me over so quick. You know, I just grabbed his head and boom. And he was like... You know, he was world champion, I think, the first time in, like, 1939 or something like that. But he was... Yeah, and he was just... Lean, he was getting older then, but you know, his fingers turned all different ways because you know, the old timers, their hands are, you know, would get broken, and their fingers and everything, and had that big cauliflower ear. You know, that was like a badge of honor to have that thing.
Well, you know, that so in lies the point. When Vince McMahon came out and said this is entertainment in the early 1980s,
yeah,
people, that term came out, fake, fake, fake. Obviously, I've been around a lot of pro wrestlers. The injuries are there.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe more prevalent than other sports. What injuries have you suffered because of wrestling?
I've had my right ankle broken in two places. I've had cracked ribs. I've had both of these shoulders, like, fractured, you know, the bones broken. Only a couple broken fingers. I've been kneed and kicked. I've had, you know, this is a very tender area up here, and I've had this all, well, yeah, I know you can see that. I don't know if you can see that.
A little bit there, yeah.
Cave in my head, and, you know, I've had my eyes and stuff like that, but I think that the cracked ribs and the ankle.
Mm. Why do you continue on with those injuries, knowing they're prevalent in your business?
Why did I keep on?
Yeah.
Oh, I loved the business. I mean, this was my life. It was my job. First, it was my job. You know, I had to pay the bills, but I loved the business, and you know, I wanted to do it all my life. Of course, you can't do that, but you know, that was why.
Want to take right here before we go to the news break, and Charlie will be with us through 9 o'clock this morning, so don't go anywhere. But want to talk when we're talking injuries. I want to talk about the blood. People have all speculation as to what it is. I've heard everything from capsules to ketchup to all this. It's real.
I've never seen a blood capsule. The only people I've ever heard talk about a blood capsule have been wrestling fans. I've never seen one. I've never seen ketchup. You know, when you see blood, you see blood.
So how does that happen?
Well,
Is that one of those things you don't want to...
Yeah, I really don't want to discuss that.
Had you bled in the ring?
Yeah.
Okay. When that happens, and you have blood, obviously, running down your face at that point, your own blood,
right,
by your own admission, why would you have a love for a business that's going on in? I guess is, I think, what most people are saying. Just the way it goes?
I guess so. Yeah, that's what you would have to say, you know? Sometimes it's here and you don't want it, like when I've had my eyes torn open and stuff, you know? That's just part of the business. You know, you try to do stuff to draw the fans. You don't want to discuss them, but you want to do it so you can... different things are done, you know, to draw maybe a better house next time, a better crowd.
Charlie Fulton from an interview we did in 2012. Again, Charlie Fulton passed away on Saturday at the age of 67. Now joining us, a WWE Hall of Famer, was in Marion, Ohio just a couple years ago. One of the all-time greats, Mr. USA, Tony Atlas. Tony, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How you doing? I'm sorry to get the news about my dear friend Charlie Fulton. He was a very gentle giant of a man, and I don't think you can find not one person that have an ill word to say about Charlie. He was a very quiet man, but when he talked, he always had something to say, and it was mostly very, very interesting what he said, but he didn't talk very much. He was a very quiet gentleman, but had a very big heart, and he was probably one of the best wrestlers that I met, guys like him and Bill Howard. In the wrestling business, we used to call them job guys. Now, believe it or not, the guys that is the job guy, which is the guy that was losing a match back in the older days, they was mostly the best wrestlers because they knew how to guide the beginners. Like when I had some of my first matches, my first week was against either Charlie Fulton or Bill Howard. And they would just lead me in the ring by the nose. And I'd come out the ring after wrestling Charlie Fulton, and fans would tell me, oh, you did good, you did great, Bob. You did fantastic. But what they didn't know, every move that I made was told to me by Charlie Fulton.
What was it like to actually be in the ring with him?
What now?
What was it like to be in the ring with him?
Charlie, you felt comfortable. You felt like you were with your dad or you were with your teacher or your coach. You knew he was going to guide you the right way. You knew he was going to take care of you. You knew you were going to get in the ring and get out safely. You know, when you talk about guys like Ric Flair, Ric Flair must have had 1,000 matches against Charlie Fulton. You talk about Wahoo McDaniel. He had many matches against Charlie Fulton. You look back at all the old Mid-Atlantic, and you would see Charlie Fulton had been in the ring with some of the greatest wrestling stars that ever been in this business. And it was guys that like Charlie Fulton that would make Ric Flair. Guys like Charlie Fulton made Paul Jones. They were the guys that made the stars of stars.
Mm. And for people...
Without guys like that, there would never be no big superstars in wrestling. Charlie Fulton been in the ring with Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan. I think it'd be almost impossible from the early 70s all the way up until the 90s to find a wrestler that had not been in the ring with Charlie Fulton.
why do you think he had great wrestling skills, but a lot of people, the road in those days ran people out of the business. Why do you think he was able to survive when so many did not, drop by the wayside and just gave it up and went home?
Charlotte didn't have a big ego. See, a lot of guys just wanted to win. Charlotte, if he won, he won. And if he did, if he didn't win, it didn't bother. He didn't have a very large ego. He was, like I say, he had a heart of gold. He was a very generous person. He didn't mind. He loved helping people. So when Charlotte allowed me to win a match, only thing Charlotte expect me to do after the match is to thank him. And so after everybody matched with Charlotte, they said, hey, thank you for putting me over, Charlotte. And he was happy with that. He was happy to go around and hang out with the wrestlers. And he was very hated. You know, he didn't hang out much in bars. He didn't party a lot. Like I said, he was just a good old country boy. But he enjoyed what he did. He enjoyed traveling, seeing different places. You know, I'd rode up and down the street, up and down the road with him back in the early 70s. And he would stop and tell me a story about this certain place and tell me a story about that place or this place. You know, he would... You know, he didn't have a very large ego. He was a very humble person.
When we look back at the wrestling business, where does he rank in that?
Well, if it was up to me, I would put Charlotte within one of the top 10 wrestlers. See, most people look at things like, you take the late Ox Baker. Ox Baker was a good drawing card, but he couldn't wrestle. Hulk Hogan was a good drawing card, but he couldn't wrestle. You see? You know, if you saw one Hulk Hogan match, you seen them all. You know, he was a guy that could work with... Charlotte could wrestle anybody's style. He could wrestle Harley Race and go at Harley Race pace. He could wrestle against Ric Flair, who went 100 miles per hour, and work at Ric Flair pace. Then he could turn right around and wrestle a big man like Black Jack Mulligan and work his pace. And that's why most of them guys like Charlie Fulton, they use him for jobber because they was great wrestler, but they didn't have the charisma to draw money. Some of your biggest money makers in this business couldn't wrestle.
When you look back at him, how are you going to remember him personally, Tony?
I'm going to tell you this way. And these are not my words. These are the words of Klondike Bill. He said, Kid, if you leave this business and you have one person that you can call your friend, consider yourself lucky. I've been pretty lucky. There's several people that I call my friend, and Charlie Fulton was a person that I could call a friend. So I'm always going to remember Charlie. One of the most hardest things to get in the wrestling business. Becoming world champion is not hard. Becoming intercontinental champion is not hard. Becoming world tag team champion is not hard. What is hard is to leave the business with a friend. And Charlie Fulton, he felt that in everybody he met. Everybody that ever known Charlie would say, Charlie Fulton is a good friend.
That's a very nice way to put it. Tony Atlas, Mr. USA, WWE Hall of Famer. Tony, I hope we see you back this way very soon.
Well, I do too. I enjoy my stay there. That's a wonderful area. And I see why Charlie Fulton was such a wonderful person, because he represents the people of Marion, Ohio very, very well. If you all want to know what the people in that area is like, just look up Charlie Fulton.
Thank you, Tony Atlas.
Humble. With a big heart, and is very generous to others, out to make people happy, not to take from nobody, but to give to others.
Very well put. Thank you so much, Tony Atlas.
Good morning. Welcome, sir. Have a wonderful day.
Bye-bye. Mr. USA, Tony Atlas. Now, we're going to go to Charlie Fulton. We're going to come back with Tommy Young in just 1 second. But we're going to go to Charlie Fulton in his own words on this program, 2012, talking about great talents in the wrestling business.
Who do you consider to be the greatest talent you ever saw wrestle?
I guess in their prime, I'll tell you, it would have to be, I'd have to put like Flair and Steamboat, you know, and like a Harley Race. I don't know if you know who Harley Race is. Yeah. And these guys, it was like Poetry in Motion, or Jack Briscoe, Dory Funk Jr. You know, you sit there and watch these guys, because I used to watch them every night, you know, and watch their, you know, and learn and try moves that they would do. But it was just like Poetry in Motion, and watching these guys, and they would go an hour draw, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. All the time in the World Championship matches, is he won an hour draw.
And again, that was Charlie Fulton from an interview we did with him back in 2012. Again, we're remembering Charlie Fulton this morning, who sadly passed away on Saturday at the age of 67. Today, we've had some great remembrances from Robert Fuller and Tony Atlas, and now we're going to remember a man who I believe was in Marion, Ohio just last year to visit his friend. Of course, you're going to recognize this name, the probably, without question, the most famous referee in the history of the wrestling business, Tommy Young. Tommy, how are you?
I'm real good. Thank you for the very nice introduction.
Tommy, so many people remember you for so long out there doing what you did. How did you come in contact with Charlie Fulton?
Well, we're from the same area. Back when we broke in, back in the early to mid-70s, we were out of the Detroit promotion. It was actually run by a man called Eddie Farhat. He was the original Sheik. Not the Iron Sheik, but the original Sheik. This guy was a real Arab. The Iron Sheik is actually he's a Persian. He's an Iranian. He's not even an Arab. But anyway, he ran the promotion in the Detroit area, which covered parts of Ontario, Canada, Ohio, and Charlie was from that area because he was born and raised in Marion, Ohio. And he broke in a little before me. I never knew him. He broke in before me. And once I was in wrestling and wound up coming to the Carolinas, which is where I'm calling from now, or where you're calling me from now, Charlotte, North Carolina, I made my home here, and I've been living here since 1976. And I actually met Charlie. I was still wrestling. I think it was 1973, which would have been my rookie year. And he broke in the Detroit area a little bit before me. The way it worked up there, there was a local promotion that worked in conjunction with the Sheik, kind of worked under him, run by a man named Lou Klein, who was better known really as Lou Bastine, one of the Bastine brothers, but his real name was Lou Klein. And he had a school that, you know, there were so many schools that were around, and that this was affiliated with the Sheik. The Sheik's program would usually be on CKLW TV, which came out of Canada, right across the border from Detroit to Windsor, Ontario. And he would advertise on the show, Lou Klein would, about his wrestling school. And Charlie, telling me what he did, he got drafted and had to go to into the service for a couple years for Vietnam, although I don't think Charlie ever actually saw any action. But he did get drafted, and then he came out and he went to Lou's school, and I went later. And when I started wrestling, he was working. He was about a year or two ahead of me, and he had a good reputation by then already. Very easy to get along with. Everybody liked Charlie. His real name is Gary. Actually, his real name is Gary Fulton, but that's what his dad always called him. But I don't know. Charlie goes better with Fulton anyway, and Irene always called him Charlie, so I called him Charlie, and that's how I'm always going to refer to him. Anyway, that's how I met him. I don't remember exactly where it was. I think it was a spot show in Michigan. I actually may have still been breaking in. But anyway, I met him there. And we actually kind of went our separate ways because I was doing mostly wrestling. I started refereeing a little later. And I just didn't have much of a, of a future in wrestling, I knew I didn't. I didn't have what it took. Charlie did. Charlie was a very good performer, and he fit right into our profession. I really didn't. Refereeing was very fortunate for me. I don't think I would have ever made it in this business as a wrestler. You would have never even heard of me. But by the grace of God, I was able to make my name as a referee and go about as far as I think a referee could go. But he and I were, we got to be close in the mid-70s. I wound up here in the Carolinas working under the Crockett promotion, and he was already here. So I was actually with an organization called the IWA back in 1975, and they were pretty much going opposition to the promotion here, the Crockett promotion. And when the IWA went under, I approached the Crockett promotion. They hired me. That's how I got to really be close to Charlie. And our friendship just grew as the years went on.
When you were reffing one of his matches, his skill in the ring, we just talked with Tony Atlas. Tony Atlas said he would rank him as one of the 10 greatest in-ring performers, not the charismatic side, but just in-ring technicians of all time. Where do you put him?
Is it possible for you to raise your volume a little bit where I could hear you just a little better?
Is that a little better?
Slightly, but I did get the question, and I adhered to that just a second ago. He was a very good performer, the type of guy that you could always count on. Let me give you an example. This was back in the late 70s. Actually, this was the early 80s, and Ole Anderson had taken over the book here from George Scott, who had it when I came in. And one night we were at the old Charlotte Coliseum. It's now called the Bojangles Arena. It's still there. And we had an afternoon show. And one of the guys, I don't know what happened, couldn't make it, couldn't be there. And I knew that we were short a guy, and I also knew that Charlie was off that day, and he was staying in the hotel where most of the guys stayed. I suggested to Ole, why don't you let me give Charlie a call? He could be down here quickly, and he'd be the perfect man to fill in. And Ole knew how good Charlie was, too. He said, yeah, get a hold of him. So I called him. I said, Charlie, can you get down here right away? And he was at the arena within a half hour, put in a good match, made a, probably a couple hundred dollars that day. I don't know what he got. But I helped get him that shot. And, I mean, if he was bad, I wouldn't have said that. But I knew what a good performer he was. And he's a good guy. I mean, he and I were friends for a long time. Extremely quiet guy. You wouldn't know he was there. But everybody liked him. And he just got the job done. And Tony really epitomizes that, that he was such a good hand. I don't think he had an enemy in the world. He just wasn't the type of person that made enemies. Maybe I'm a little more like that. I don't mean to be. But he was so laid back and easygoing, and I know exactly what Tony's talking about.
When you came to Marion last year to visit with Charlie, what was that like to see him again and just visit?
It was difficult because Charlie was sinking. Unfortunately, Charlie smoked a lot in his life. He was a very big chain smoker. And the smoking really did a number on his system, and he was just his health was deteriorating, and it was just tougher for him. See, I would I regularly went to Michigan every winter, and sometimes in the summer as well, often in the summer, and I would almost always go up and you know, do about three quarters of the trip, and then stop in Marion and see Charlie and Irene. And we usually go out to a Mexican restaurant that we always went to, and you know, have a good evening, and then usually Irene would go to bed fairly early because she had a job and had to be up early. And me and Charlie would stay up all night drinking and reminiscing, and we did that quite a bit. But the last particular time, he was just getting worse, and it was getting really tough because it was tough on him. Tough on Irene. He's been and falling more and hurting himself. It was tough on the poor guy, but he hung in there good. He always handled everything about as well as anyone would ever expect, and probably much better.
When you got the word on Saturday that Charlie had passed, certainly knowing that he was ill, we wouldn't call it a shock. What was the feeling?
Well, I had been staying in touch with him because he had fallen, and I think he broke his arm or something. Like I say, the poor guy was just having so much trouble. And Irene couldn't be there that often. She had her job. He had the two dogs there, and I think he tripped on one of the dogs one time. But anyway, it was just getting worse, and then eventually he had to go to rehab, which is where he was. And they, you know, I was hoping that, you know, he would get back home. But I was pretty much resigned to the fact that, you know, Charlie was just getting worse. We're all getting up there. He's just a little younger than me. I think he was, what, 67 when he died?
67.
Okay, I think he was a year younger than me because I'll be 69 this year. I think he probably would have been 68 this year. And so we were roughly in the same age bracket. But I was staying in touch with him because he had the phone with him, and I was calling him about once a week. How you doing? And, well, I'm trying to get home, but I can't walk, but we're working on it. And I talked to Irene, too. And then, well, it was Sunday morning. Actually, she called me at 4 in the morning. I was asleep, of course, but when I got up and checked the call, you know, saw that she had left the message. I think Charlie died around 1 a.m., I believe, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I think she called me about 4 a.m. Anyway, I've been in touch with Irene, and I'll continue to stay in touch with Irene. She'll stay my friend, just the way Charlie did.
What was your, when did you, you say you had checked in with Charlie since he was in rehab. Do you remember what your last conversation was like or when it was?
Yeah, it was just about a week ago, and if that, I mean, because I was staying, didn't talk to him every day, but I mean, like I said, I stayed in touch, and he was wanting to get home, and he was frustrated. I know how that is. I think he was, you know, like getting on Irene, like, come on, get me home. But he also knew that it was very tough on her, and it was just a tough situation for him. He wanted to be home, but he knew he was a burden. And it's a situation that none of us want to be in. But I only talked to him, like, say, about 5-6 days ago. His voice sounded weak on the phone, but he wanted to get home, and I was hoping he would, but unfortunately he didn't.
How are you going to remember him?
Well, we had a good friendship. See, another thing, too, down in Charlotte here, there's a fellow named Greg Price who has these, been almost to the point of yearly fan fest reunions of wrestlers getting together. They used me a lot because I'm right from this area, so it didn't cost them anything for transportation and anything, so I wasn't that expensive. And I'm very fan-friendly. The fans were very nice to me, and I was very nice to them, and I was kind of popular there. And I'm trying to remember, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe three, I suggested to Greg, hey, you need new faces all the time. What about Charlie Fulton? The guy is legendary here. In the 70s and 80s, he was solidly an underneath performer. He didn't work on top here, although he worked on top, I think, in other areas. And but here he was pretty much on the earlier card. But the fans all knew him and respected him. And I talked Greg into booking Charlie. And I told Charlie, come on down. And it's about 450 miles from from Marion, because he's north of Columbus, so it's further. Charlie's got about 475 miles from there down to here. But he drove down by himself, and by then he was still okay. Obviously he could drive and all that, but he was already his health was starting to get worse. But he drove down, he stayed with me. This was a 3-4 day event. We had a banquet, we had matches, we had everything. Fans came from all over. I think Tony was there that year. I know Tony is living in, he was living in Maine. Isn't he still in Maine?
I believe so.
Yeah, he was there. But anyway, Charlie came and had a good time, saw a bunch of old friends, and I think that did him some good. And I think Scott Teal has a thing that he does regularly, I think in Tennessee, where he has a bunch of the guys come to his home. And I know Charlie did a lot of extensive work in Tennessee. So he and Irene used to attend that thing. I never went to that, but they enjoyed that too. So Charlie was well represented and well thought of. He'll be remembered very fondly. I'm sure Facebook is full of stuff. I don't do the computer. I know I should, but I don't. But Peggy Lathan, very close friend of mine and someone who's as well known in wrestling as anyone, she was telling me that tributes were coming in all over Facebook for Charlie, and he deserved every one and then some.
How will you remember him as your personal friend?
Well, like I said, I got close to him in the late 70s and early 80s, and I would go to Detroit. And to go to Detroit, the route that I took, you went right by Marion. So I got to know his mother and dad. He was an only child, and I stayed over a couple times. His father always called him Gary. He's the only one. Everybody else called him Charlie. Just a good friend. Not controversial at all, although we're dead opposites as far as political is concerned, because Irene is active in the Democrat Party. That's her job. She works for the Democrat Party. And so he became a solid Democrat, and I've always been a Republican. So we used to go at it all the time. I mean, Irene was smart. She'd stay out of it. But we'd go at it all the time. But good guy, good drinking buddy. Had a lot of good times together. I mean, because every year I did this, I was going up. Not like steadily from the 70s right up until now, but for a good period. I would visit them a lot. I mean, like I said, my friendship with him pretty much covers about 40 years. Long time. Actually, a little longer than that.
Probably the most famous referee in the wrestling business, Tommy Young, remembering his friend Charlie Fulton. Thank you, Tommy.
My pleasure. Thank you for calling. God bless Charlie and anybody out there that's listening. Thanks for the time.
Thank you. Got about 10 minutes left in the program here, and actually one of our co-hosts here at the station, Terry Tackett, had a relationship with Charlie Fulton. I interviewed Charlie twice over the years. Again, Charlie Fulton passed away Saturday at the age of 67, but I interviewed him twice, once at WMRN and once at another radio station. And he was always very nice. He would get up at 6 o'clock in the morning to come do an interview with me. And he would always talk about Andre the Giant, and he would talk about Hulk Hogan and the people he saw and knew, and it was always a fun conversation, and hopefully at some point this week we'll get to play that interview from 2012 in its entirety, in which he was coming in to talk about an event that you were helping put on back in 2012. How did your friendship with Charlie Fulton start?
You know, Scott, I think Tommy elaborated on it there a minute ago. Tommy Young did. I was pretty active in the Democrat Club at the time, too, as was Irene. And I don't know, I just went up to her one night at the end of a meeting, and I said, Irene, I said, so I think we need to do something for Charlie. I said, because I think that any person of that stature should be recognized, you know, in Marion. So I said, I'd like to do like a fan fest, like a Charlie Fulton weekend. I said, I'd like to structure it around WrestleMania. You know, I said, so maybe get WrestleMania, have some people come, you know, and do something special, have Charlie sign some autographs, and you know, and I said, what do you think about that? She said, oh, she said, he'd love it. She said, you know, he's kind of down right now. She said, you know, go over and talk to him about it. Went over to his house, talked to him about the easiest guy in the world to talk to about. I mean, like anything you wanted, he would accommodate you, you know. I mean, he gave us some things to raffle off and, you know, and...
Did he show you, did he keep wrestling memorabilia?
Yeah, he did. As a matter of fact, one of the things that was it's really awesome, we still have it, is that he gave us a sweatsuit that he had worn overseas.
Is that right?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of the country. I can't remember the country off the top of my head. I think it was in Africa somewhere. He was wrestling, and he had this thing, and it was beautiful.
Even though this was 2012 and he was not feeling so good, what did you think his connection to the wrestling business still was?
Well, I thought he still had a little bit of a connection, but to be honest, I was surprised he didn't have more of a connection. Or maybe he did have more, but he didn't let me know, you know.
Did he still like wrestling?
He seemed to. I mean, you know, I don't know how to say this, but it just seemed like his interest got a little bit more perked or sparked, you know, whenever, like, we brought up this thing, you know, about we wanted to honor him with a dinner, and, you know, we ended up having a 9-pin no-tap bowling tournament. We had about 30, 40 people show up, and Charlie had bought a replica belt, and the winner of that 9-pin no-tap got this replica belt. So we had the tournament up at Buckeye Lanes, and... So.
You stayed in touch with him.
Yeah, yeah.
When was the last time you spoke with him?
Oh, boy, Scott, that's a good question. Probably would have been 2014 sometime.
2014?
Yeah.
What was the tenor of that conversation?
Well, of course, you know, we dabbled a little bit, you know, of course... I see we, you know, with our endeavor there, Classic Championship Wrestling, and we just bounced ideas, you know. I mean, he talked about how he thought that this should be done, you know, things like that.
He still cared.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is nice.
He had actually turned me on to give me a phone number for another pro wrestler there, Bobby Fulton, and so I got a hold of Bobby and...
So a helpful guy.
Yeah, so he was, you know, he was pretty helpful in that sense, you know, and...
Is there a memory in those moments over the years that sticks out in your mind? Something good you did with him, a special moment?
Yeah, I mean, one of the special moments I did, you know, was I remember he came up to Buckeye for that 9-pin no-tap tournament. He came over, shook my hand. He was just real happy that there was a lot of people still remembered him, you know. And that was his biggest fear, was that he was afraid, you know, that nobody was going to...
Well, it's kind of interesting because... When wrestling hit its boom time in the 80s and 90s, Charlie was living here.
Sure.
And people would always know that name, that there's
absolutely
a pro wrestler who was in the WWF, who lived in Marion, Ohio, and it was really kind of a celebrity type of thing.
And to this day, that's the only thing I feel sad about is during some of our Classic Championship, we invited him numerous times, and I just wish, you know, with him and Percy Friend, you know, that was a good friend of his, and I just wish they could have, Ox Baker, yeah, I wish they could could have got together. And...
You know, it's kind of interesting and sad in a certain way. This all started in January of 2013.
Yes.
And now Ox Baker, Percival Friend, and Charlie Fulton are all gone.
Man. Yeah, all three of them.
Three great guys.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I'd printed up some T-shirts, and they might even still be running around town here. A few people bought them, and I had Charlie Fulton's picture on the front of it, and it says, "The wrestling's only true living legend."
Yeah.
And I had Charlie Fulton. And then it gave the on the back, it said, you know, like the Charlie Fulton Fan Fest.
He meant a lot to you.
He did. He was a guy, he was so easy to talk to. I mean, we talked to stuff outside of wrestling. I mean, just... He was just an easy guy to talk to.
You watch his matches on YouTube. What do you think his place in wrestling history is?
I don't know if I'm overstepping my, but I think he was kind of like a pioneer, in a sense of a pioneer to me being someone that, I mean, like Tommy and those guys have said before, he didn't really complain a lot. I mean, he just went in, did his job, and, you know, and...
And that's something
and
that
he,
I think
he kind of paved the way for.
Well, there's something I want to know say about these wrestlers who I have met. They don't complain.
Yeah,
none of them.
Right.
It's very rare.
Absolutely.
Tony Atlas has been here.
Oh,
Nikolai
wonderful.
Volkov,
absolutely.
Ox Baker.
Sure.
They don't complain.
They don't. Yeah. That's one thing I got to say. I tell you, and my girlfriend Michelle can attest to this. We talk about it all the time. One of the easiest guys to work with, honestly, was Larry.
He was fairly simple to deal with.
Larry, he was, you know, Larry Zbyszko.
Ox Baker didn't even want a hotel room.
Yeah,
I mean, they were very
easygoing guys,
simple guys. In the pantheon of things, when you think of the name Charlie Fulton, now how will you remember it? Wait, I do want to mention this. When is Charlie Fulton, just Graveside Services?
Yes, it's a Friday at 1 p.m., I believe, at the Marion Cemetery.
Friday, March 18th at the Marion Cemetery at...
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock, graveside services for Charlie Ford.
Yeah, yes, yes.
Okay, that being said, how will you remember him?
I'm just going to remember him as a friend, like I say. You know, he was, you know, he helped me out a lot. He answered a lot of questions that I had before I got into the wrestling, you know, the wrestling business. And, you know, he didn't think it was a, you know, I mean, he seemed to like everything that, you know, I mean, he was just a good guy to talk to, and he was a friend. He was a dear friend of mine, and I'll never forget him.
And we certainly send out warm wishes and special thoughts to his wife, Irene Fulton.
Yes. Yep, God bless her. Yeah.
Irene, I hope you're listening to the program today. I hope you enjoyed it. We want to thank Tony Atlas, Mr. USA,
absolutely,
former WWE wrestler and Hall of Famer. We want to thank Tommy Young, who's in many Hall of Fames all over the world, close friend of Charlie Fulton, probably the most legendary referee in the wrestling world. And, of course, Robert Fuller, who has been in the wrestling business many, many years, ran territories in Florida, for joining us and the clips we've had of Charlie in his own words. And hopefully at some point this week we'll be able to play that interview in its entirety. And, of course, Terry Tackett here, and we all had a somewhat of a relationship with Charlie. We'll miss him. Graveside services are this Friday, March the 18th at 1 p.m., Marion Cemetery, and our thoughts are with Irene, his wife, right now, and certainly I believe he had a daughter.
Yeah.
Thoughts are with his daughter.
Two
grandkids, and there'll never be another Charlie Fulton.
That's right.
What a legacy he's left in Marion. Stay tuned.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.